It is such a pleasure and privilege for me to welcome back to the show today the acclaimed writer and storyteller and actress, Dr. Sindiwe Magona. She is the winner of numerous literary awards. She holds 3 honorary doctorates, has been widely recognized for her contribution to the struggle against racism, for her commitment to women and children's issues in particular in post-apartheid South Africa. And she's been on the show with us before. You may recall we spoke about her children's book, The Skin We're In. We spoke about her nonfiction book, Theatre Road, which is the biography of actress Tembi Mchali Jones. Today, though, we turn our attention to her adult fiction writing. She's just released a new novel called When the Village Sleeps. It is the story of 4 generations of South African women within a single family and of their different experiences of struggle and of brokenness and of healing at the end of the day. Sindiwe Magona, welcome back to Cape Talk. It's lovely to have you on the show with us again.
Thank you.
Sindiwe, it is a novel that touches on so many really important topics. I hardly know where to start. It speaks to drug addiction, to teen pregnancy, to discrimination against people with disabilities. It deals with identity and those who feel torn between different identities and different worlds. Maybe let me ask you, what was the starting point for this novel? Was there a particular theme you wanted to explore, or was there a particular character who kind of crept into your head and made herself known?
I think if I could summarize it, it's that there is so much that needs, you know, to be addressed in our country, our nation. And we are grown-ups. We are the parenting and, you know, grandparenting generation. How can we just watch and do nothing? Mm. We must act, and act as a matter of urgency. I'm not saying I have the answers. What I'm saying is we can see the rot all around us. We can see how, as a nation, we're not coming together. There's so much hate. There's so much brokenness. There's so much dysfunctionality. Mm. That's not how a nation grows or thrives. We have to mind our young people, our children better. Nurture them. When I say mind, I mean nurture them. You know, along ways that lead to wholesomeness, to so that each child can become what they were meant to be. You know, help in ways that makes the human being, you know, be master, mistress of her, his, you know, personhood.
Mm. I mean, Sindiwe, there is a wonderful, so to explain to those who haven't read the book yet, there are elements of poetry throughout the novel, which are the voices of the old, the ancestors speaking into the story and reflecting on what is happening or what is about to happen and what they see around them. And one of the very early and very poignant references is to the issue of children becoming parents when they themselves are still children. And Sindiwe, the theme of teen pregnancy is one of the cornerstones of this book, one that you treat with immense care and empathy for the teenager involved, and as much as one can judge the decisions that she makes and the error of judgments that she shows, there is a great deal of care and concern, and in the end, a happy ending for her. Was it important to you to craft that particular narrative journey of Busisiwe's story to have a happy ending, that moment of her becoming a parent when she is barely into high school herself should not be the thing that ends her life and her chance of a happy and productive life?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm not coming as a judge or to condemn. I am saying, how come this child gets herself into this mess? Where were the grown eyes, the eyes of grown-ups to guide her? Children can't bring themselves up. Mm. You know, children can't be one can't be both a child and a parent. You know, children need grown-ups to guide them, nurture them towards adulthood. And if the parenting, grandparenting generation were doing their duty, you know, there wouldn't be so much teen pregnancy, teen parenthood. You know, there wouldn't. And traditional, you know, people knew how to guide the young. We dropped the ball. We became civilized, westernized, whatever. Why don't we look back and see the ends behind tradition, glean what's good and make it into modernity? We can't throw away everything. We shouldn't. We made a mistake. Let's go and search what was good. I'm not saying practice it as it was practiced, but see the aim behind the practice and see how you can adapt it to today's living.
That was one of the things I found absolutely fascinating about this book, Sindiwe, was reading some of the deep explanations of cultural practices and the reason behind them that I had not known before reading this novel. And your explanation there of how we must find a way to weave what was good and valuable and meaningful about those practices into a modern context and not throw the baby out with the bathwater is what you're saying, to give it a modern turn of phrase. Now, you paint that... Oh, we've lost the line again there. My apologies. I hope we will get Dr. Sindiwe Magona back again to continue the conversation after the 1:30 news headlines. Just a reminder once again that the book is called When the Village Sleeps. It is a novel, the story of... four generations of women. There is the Gogo Kulu, the mother Phyllis, the daughter Busisiwe, and then ultimately the great-granddaughter Mandlakazi enters the story as well. And it's partly set in a township environment here in Cape Town, in Gwanele. The other part of the story unfolds in the rural Eastern Cape when the great-grandchild is removed from the township and goes home with her great-grandmother, and an immense change happens in her life. I don't want to give away too much of the plot by saying more than that for now.
Cape Talk. Pippa's on Twitter.
You can tweet her at PJC Hudson.
Right, fingers crossed. We're hoping the line is going to hold up with Dr. Sindiwe Magona, who is back with us discussing her new novel, When the Village Sleeps, a story of four generations of South African women struggling with issues of identity, struggling with issues of living between two worlds, the world of the rural Eastern Cape and the world of the township in Cape Town, and the different factors that play into their lives in those settings. Dr. Magona, you were saying before the break that... there is a lot still of value to be found in the traditional values, the traditional setting, and certainly in this book it is a place of healing, of hope, of mending brokenness. When characters are taken out of the township setting and go home with Kulu to the Eastern Cape, it is a profoundly positive experience for them almost all of the time. I won't say any more than that because we don't want to give the plot away. But, I mean, what are you trying to say with that juxtaposition? It's not to say that nobody can have a successful and happy and fulfilling and productive life in the township, but really you're making a plea not to lose what is good and valuable about the older way of living.
This is true. There is good in the rural areas. There is evil in the rural areas. There is good in the townships, there is evil in the township. It's not where, it's how you negotiate, you know, what's around you.
Now, negotiating what is around you is a very difficult challenge for young Busisiwe when we meet her. She's still in primary school. She is a young girl torn between two worlds. She lives with a fairly dysfunctional family in Gwanele Township. Her grandmother is far away in the Eastern Cape, somebody she was very close to. She is estranged from her father, and she is attending a Model C school where she feels always out of step, that she never quite belongs anywhere. Tell us a little bit more about this idea of the struggle of living between two worlds and how you want your characters to help reconcile that.
For her, it's actually three worlds. She has Gwanele and her almost dysfunctional family. But even in that family, there is the kind of, at the back of the mind when people think they do want what's better, you know, for the child. You know, the most dysfunctional, you know, most of, you know, parents, even when their own lives are in disarray, they want what's better for their child. You know, parents who dropped out of primary school or high school, if you ask them what you want for your children, they must get an education. You see, there is that. And Busi is fortunate. She has support to go to this Model C school. But every day she has to come back to Gwanele and negotiate that world and then go back the next day to a poor school in Cape Town. And the comparison and the fears that the world should never collide. Mm. Because in the township, yes, there is praise, but there is also, oh, you think you're better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And in the school she attends, she is always fearful. She doesn't really, you know, match up. She doesn't really belong and that kind of thing. And also she doesn't want the people in that world to get even a glimpse of her other world. And mm-hmm. then there's the Eastern Cape.
Sindiwe, this question of where do I belong is one that is echoed in the story of her daughter, Mandla Kazi, who is a child born with disability. And there is a beautiful moment towards the end of the book where she is on a camp with other young people living with disability. And they have a conversation about what it means to belong and what it means to feel always like an outsider. And she looks around that group and says, "Here we are feeling like we don't belong, like we have always been on the outskirts. We are searching to find a way into the in-group. Why don't we rather look around ourselves and tell ourselves this is the in-group. We are already here. We are already accepted and acceptable." And it's such a powerful comment on how we frame our beliefs about ourselves. Yes. Tell us a little bit more about that wonderful character of Mandla Kazi.
The thing is, Mandla Kazi stumbles. You know, she is a special character. I won't give it away. Mm. She's a special, but she's, you know, she gets it that you have to accept yourself, because even among that group, she realizes that there was othering. Those who could see, but those who couldn't see, well, you know, that kind of thing. Those on wheelchairs were looked up down upon by those who could walk. That, you know, othering among people who are bleeding from being othered. Mm. But it comes from self-acceptance. Say, let's accept ourselves. If even we cannot see that we are whole, we are acceptable, how can we expect people who have no, you know, what we used to call handicap, mm. who don't know what it to live, you know, in, you know, that kind of, how can we expect them? Let's first accept ourselves and be the group that says we are okay, we are fine, we can be whatever we want. Mm. We self-acceptance, whatever, however you are othered. If you accept yourself, that's a step in the right direction.
Yeah. One more thing I really must discuss before we need to wrap up the conversation. This is a novel that is deeply, deeply critical of dependency culture. One of your characters, Phyllis, lives from social grant to social grant. She seems incapable when we first meet her of ever finding a way to stand on her own feet. The teen mom anticipates the arrival of child grant money. And then the grandmother says, "But why? For what do we need this money? We never had it before. We managed without it." And turns around and the book laments that one of the poems of the ancestors contains the comment, "The grant to the poor. What did it really grant the poor except more poor, more poverty?" What are you wanting to say with this book about our social support network? I mean, it feels to me like that you see a dangerous sense of dependency, perhaps whittling away our agency to stand up for ourselves in life.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. I have received a lot of flack. I am not anti-help. I am not anti, you know, grant. I am saying, why does the grant not work in a way that enables people to become independent? And Kulu, the grandmother, you know, Musi's grandmother,
yeah,
the great-grandmother of her child, Mandla Kazi, shows it. You know, if you can take the, you know, if you calculate how much money the nation, you know, spends on this, you know, child grant for 18 continuous years, even if you took that amount and spent it more judiciously on the child, say for 5 to 7 years, depending on where the mother was when the brokenness started. Because let's not run away. Teen mothers getting children is brokenness because there is no future for that child or the mother. Hardly. But if you took that and then, you know, guided the teen mom and her child so that in 5 years, the teen mom was off the ground and able to sustain herself, that's real help.
Dr. McGonagall, what do you hope readers will take away from this novel? So for me, I took away a learning, a feeling like I understand a great deal more about elements of traditional culture that had never been explained to me before. I feel like I have a better sense of the reason behind some of the cultural practices that I didn't have before I started reading. And I thank you for that. What else do you hope your readers will take away from this book?
I hope readers, and I hope, I mean, I want this book in all the other, you know, indigenous languages. Mm. I hope people can get a sense of they are not, they are not feeble-minded. They are not feeble-bodied. They are able to look after themselves and use the grant, you know, find a way of using the grant to enhance their own wholeness, who they are. As Ilima in the tradition, which is in the book, how the village would come and help someone who couldn't hoe and who couldn't plow for themselves because they either had no cattle or implements. But, you know, you wouldn't get that kind of help for year in, year out, year in. The idea was that we help you plow, but you mind the field. You know, you are the one who must water and you are the one who must, you know, make sure, you know, the plants grow well and healthy. You are helped to help yourself.
Dr. Sindiwe Magona, we have to leave it there due to time constraints. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. My apologies that the time was cut into because of the technical difficulties, but wonderful to have you with us on the show again. The novel is called When the Village Sleeps. Author is Sindiwe Magona. It's published by Picador Africa, an imprint of Pan Macmillan, and available in stores now at 290 Rand a copy.